But I am very disappointed with President Putin. You know, I thought he was somebody that meant what he said, and he'll talk so beautifully, and then he'll bomb people at night. We don't like that.
Every Monday, we talk to Chris Saliza, political commentator. He's an independent news creator on Substack, YouTube, and Newsphere. You've seen him on News Nation. Man, he's all over the place. And with President Trump today addressing Russia and Putin and the delivery of weapons to Ukraine through NATO, all of that coming up today. And it's a good day to have Chris Saliza on with us. How you doing, Chris?
I mean, it's never boring. I'll say that, Chris. It's always, always, always something. And this is another sort of, I would say, sort of remarkable turnaround for Donald Trump. I mean, you know, it's not so long ago that I was on with you guys talking about the confrontation between Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. And now we're kind of in this place where Trump has suddenly swung to being pro-Ukraine, which is remarkable in the space of a few months.
Yeah, and Chris, obviously, we've been on the air for the past few hours. I haven't seen it yet if Trump has made his official major announcement related to Russia. Was that the threat to levy more severe tariffs, or was there something else?
That's all I have right now, Amy, okay. The very severe tariffs if there's no peace deal within 50 days with Ukraine. You know, is there, I'm always hesitant to say that's it when we're talking, you know, it's 12 o'clock here in 12:30 here in D.C. So I'm always hesitant to say that's it from Donald Trump if we're in the middle of a day. Right. But yes, that appears to be it. But even that, and even the clip you played at the opening of this segment, I mean, I think it is important for people to realize how big a change that is from where Donald Trump has been most of his political life. I mean, this is a guy who didn't publicly criticize Vladimir Putin for years and insisted. And I always remind people in at that summit in Helsinki in his first term when they met, he said he trusted Putin more than he trusted the American intelligence community when it came to Russia meddling in the election, that Putin said they didn't do it and Trump took him at his word. So this is, you know, it is not, you know, a full we are behind Ukraine and we will spend no matter what it takes forever. It is not that, but it really is a significant change of position for Donald Trump.
And just as a clarification, too, Trump was threatening severe tariffs. He is not said anything more about further sanctions, correct?
That is correct. Okay. Yes, tariffs and not sanctions. That is accurate, yes.
And so he's given a 50-day deadline on reaching some sort of deal on this, right? So do we know, Chris, why this flip? Because, I'm glad he got there, whatever it took for him to get there and have the realization that Russia is a bad actor and is not to be trusted. And Ukraine deserves to be protected. I mean, I guess I don't really care how he got to this point, but
he
did. So do we know how?
Not really, Chris. You know, I mean, we know that, you know, and I always say this, like, if you really want to know what Donald Trump's thinking, you need to follow him on True Social because he'll probably tell you, you know, and about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, he was saying, you know, I don't know why Vladimir Putin continues to bomb. He needs to stop, you know, stop Vladimir, that famous post. So I don't know if Donald Trump just sort of came to the realization that Vladimir Putin may be lying to him. I mean, I guarantee you his advisors and members of the U.S. Senate on the Republican side certainly told him that Putin was not a good faith actor, that Putin would say whatever and then do what he wanted. Maybe that finally broke through for Trump. I mean, there's nothing obvious other than Putin kept saying one thing to Trump and doing something else vis-a-vis Ukraine. And maybe Trump just kind of it reached critical mass. You know, I don't know any other there's no other obvious explanation I see. It's not like he was in a briefing where a light bulb went off or something like that. It appears as though, you know, one too many times that Vladimir Putin told him X and Vladimir Putin went and did Y, Donald Trump, at least for the moment, appears to have wised up about Putin.
Yeah, and it's, you know, people who wanted a stronger stance against Vladimir Putin and Russia, glad that the president has finally come to this decision. But you do look at the calculation from President Trump on why he makes one decision or another. And it feels like there's either a lot of saving face or reading the room because he's an entertainer. He likes a splash. He doesn't want to look bad, but he also wants to stay in the headlines and come across as strong. So that's why we have the back and forth with the tariffs. We have the back and forth with Vladimir Putin that he could end the war in 24 hours to now he is threatening more tariffs. There is no North Star for Donald Trump other than himself and the entertainment value, it feels like.
Totally agree. I always say that this is more of a vibes presidency than we've ever seen before, which is Donald Trump. I like that reading the room idea, Amy, you know, like reading the national room, sort of like what do people want right now? And I think he is, with very few exceptions, tariffs being one, there are very few things that I think from a policy perspective he holds dear and he would not negotiate on. I think at his core, he is a deal maker. He is a guy who wants to get everyone at the table. He wants to make everyone happy. And yes, he wants what's good for him too. But there is not like I don't think Donald Trump has a deeply held belief about how the Ukraine-Russia war should end. For example, I think he wants it to end. I think he would like to play a critical role in it ending because I think he would like to win a Nobel for a lot of reasons. I think he would like the bloodshed to end, but I think he'd also like to win a Nobel Prize. And so it's sort of like he doesn't really kind of care how you get to that outcome if you get to that outcome. And I think that explains some of his what I would say are clearly shifting positions.
What also seems to be a shifting position is his position on the Epstein files, which they say now didn't exist. There aren't any or of no value or whatever the issue is. Well, Dan Bongino, who is now at the FBI, over this whole thing, apparently is threatening to leave. Do we know the situation there with him and what the latest is? I know they're trying to talk him into staying.
Yeah, all we know is that there was a confrontation at the White House between Dan Bongino, who, for people who don't know, was a conservative radio talk show host prior to becoming deputy director of the FBI. That was his most recent job. So there was a competition between him and Pam Bondi, the attorney general, over this Epstein stuff and the release of this two-page memo. We know Bongino did not come to work on Friday, and we don't know much beyond that. I will say Donald Trump put out a memo, a big two social post on Saturday in which he made clear he didn't badmouth Dan Bongino, but he really pumped Pam Bondi up, which I would think if I was Dan Bongino, reading the tea leaves, that would not look great for me. So I don't know the answer. I mean, look, Trump doesn't want Dan Bongino quitting because he doesn't want the Epstein story in the news anymore. It's already been in the news much more than he would want it in the news. He wants it out of the news. He made that clear over the weekend on True Social. So any kind of personnel changes would just keep the story in the news. So I would guess they're doing everything they can to keep him. You know, I don't know if he stays or not. It's, you know, he was an odd pick to be the deputy director of the FBI. And so you sort of never know. So many people in Trump's orbit, they don't operate a normal political rule, so it's hard to know like when they're going to stay and when they're going to go, because I would have told you 3 months ago that Pete Hegseth would be out as Secretary of Defense, and here he is. So,
yeah, it's a little bit shocking, though, with the abrupt 180 regarding Epstein and the Epstein files. Mm-hmm. And right now, this does seem like the biggest pushback from the MAGA base that I've really seen, whether it's the tariffs or what's going on with Russia or running on one issue and turning on another. But this one, you're actually seeing a little bit of a bubbling pushback frustration that Trump said on Truth Social, why are you still talking about Epstein? No one's talking about him. That was a huge issue during the election, a huge issue with the MAGA right. So this could be the one thing that starts to create a lasting rift, maybe.
It's amazing, isn't it? Like that, this is the thing that the sort of MAGA online influence community, which is big and influential, isn't willing to kind of bend the knee to Trump on. They were on One Big Beautiful Bill. They have been on a number of other things. But this is a thing where even when he says stop, you know, that True Social post got a lot more comments than it got likes. And if you read through the comments, the vast majority of them are not friendly to Donald Trump. And that is, you know, intra-tribal violence there, right? That is not Democrats. That is Republicans on True Social saying, no, we're not going to give this up. It's fascinating to me. I do think it exposes a rift within the kind of Trump movement. And look, this is the dog who got the car in some level, Amy, right? Like, the Trump world, Donald Trump, Dan Bongino, Pam Bondi, Kash Patel, the FBI director, all of these people made a living either politically or professionally by stoking conspiracy theories in the conspiracy mindset. Well, that's just hard to turn off when you become the people in charge of government, right?
Yeah.
People just start to say, well, why should we believe you? And I think, you know, they're in some ways they're getting bitten by the same dog that they kind of fed raw meat to for a really long time. And I think they, you know, they don't necessarily know how to control it. I think we're seeing that now.
Yeah. And just to your point, like less than a year ago, J.D. Vance, Vice President J.D. Vance was on Theo Von's podcast saying, seriously, we need to absolutely release this list. You know, Kash Patel had said the same thing. This was not an ancillary issue. They did not equivocate when it came to the issue. It was a hard and fast. This is the big bomb. This is the tell-all, is the Epstein list. And it is bizarre to have it now, those same voices, J.D. Vance, Donald Trump, saying it's not real, it doesn't exist. What are you talking about?
Absolutely. And look, Pam Bondi went on Fox News in February and said, I have the Epstein client list on my desk and I'm reviewing it. So then in July, for her Department of Justice to put out a memo and say there's no client list, there's got to be a better explanation. Even if Pam Bondi comes out and does a press conference and says, look, I thought the question was about the Epstein files, not the client list, I misspoke, and just answer a bunch of questions from people, there's got to be, I don't think it's going to just go away organically, right? I think that conspiracy has been stoked for so many years with so many people believing it or believing there's something nefarious going on with Epstein's death and that sort of stuff. I don't think you're going to be able to just kind of ignore it and let it wither away. I think the real question is, what do they do next to try to deal with this fire that is absolutely still burning?
Lastly, Chris, as we say goodbye here, President Biden had an interview, former president, an interview with the New York Times on using AutoPen to sign for his frequent use of it, first of all, and then using it for those blanket pardons. And so this story, how much is behind it and how important is it to follow?
Well, look, I think it is notable that Joe Biden talked to the New York Times a total of zero times during his 4-year term and then gave an interview with them. Apparently, this was last Thursday when he talked to them and the story ran posted on Sunday night. Weird timing for it. You know, maybe they're trying to bury the Biden people are trying to bury this story amid all the Epstein stuff. But when I saw it, I was like, so Joe Biden decided to talk about this. You know, my guess is what he's trying to do is give some cover to some of his aides who are going to be subpoenaed about like what did they know and when did they know it, to say, look, the president has said he signed all of these documents under his own volition with the AutoPen. You know, I refer you to his statement. So it gives them some air cover there. But a little bit odd in terms of timing. Like, why did he decide this was the time to talk to the New York Times?
Chris Saliza's daily newsletter is called So What? You should subscribe to it. Also, you'll see him on YouTube, Newsphere, Substack, contributes to News Nation. He's all over the place, and he's with us on Mondays. Chris Saliza, we appreciate you as always.
Thank you, guys. Take care. Have a good week.